Yes, I am going to bring up the emails. Yeah, I did say I was going to bring up the emails. I'm going to do that now. Yes, can I do it now? Thank you. Hi, everybody. I try to answer every email that I get, and the emails are increasing, and it's getting a lot, but it's a good problem to have. So keep sending the emails. And if I have somehow overlooked a question of yours or a comment, I really apologize. I lose sleep over it. It sometimes is a great burden to me to think that I've somehow neglected someone. It's important. It's part of what I do, really, to reach out and encourage and be a consolation to those. And you're also a consolation to me, as I've said. So, and God forbid if you've sent a contribution here to help this work, and many of you have, and this work couldn't go on without it. I take pride in the fact that I have thanked everyone that has ever helped this work in the last 21 years. So if you've sent a contribution and you have not heard from me, it's because I'm a human being and I suck sometimes. And I get in my funks, you know that. And I go away for a while. I can't even bring myself to open my computer, and emails get backed up, and sometimes I lose it. And I don't want to lose you. And it's a hard thing sometimes. So be patient with me. I'm going to go back, you know, maybe even 6 months and try to catch up on things that I've missed. And if you haven't heard from me, I apologize for that. It's not a willful act of negligence. Because, again, I'm seeing more and more the importance of consoling one another. And sometimes I used to not like this part of it. I used to be more of a loner. I just want to be by myself, and I'll do my thing. I'll throw my books out the window of my ivory tower. But that's not the way it works. And it's always depression that leads me to think that way, that I don't need anybody. You know, I always think that way when I'm depressed. Well, the word depressed in the Greek, the elements are unpublic, not public. When you're depressed, you don't want to go out. You don't want to see anybody. You want to dig a hole and bury yourself and stay there. But that's not healthy. That's not good. So maybe we can help bring each other out of depression. That'd be great. Now, as promised, I'm going to deliver you the correspondence between the unveiling of Jesus Christ and the book of Genesis. And I'm going to put on hold for now until Monday. We'll talk more about the seven sealed scroll. Got lots of stuff to tell you. That's how important that scroll is. I'm going to defer that until Monday because I don't want to run out of time on this great piece of evidence. Now, Bullinger, the piece of evidence that the unveiling belongs in the scripture. Hello. I don't know if Bullinger came up with this. I'd like to give credit where credit is due. And it's true. I also like to give demerits where they're due. And you know, I do that as well. But I don't know if Bullinger was the initiator of this, the inaugurator, but this is good. And he got a lot of his stuff from other people. Bullinger credits, in his book, The Testimony of the Witness of the Stars, which is an excellent work, he credits some woman who did some important research into the constellations and how God refers to them in various parts of Scripture. So we all want to give credit where credit is due. Anyway, this is found in Dr. Bullinger's companion Bible. In his companion Bible, there in the back, there are appendices. And this is from appendix number 3. It's called Genesis Finds Its Complement in the Apocalypse. I like the alliteration. Genesis Apocalypse. Genesis Finds Its Complement. That is what completes it. Now, Genesis, we know, is a book of beginnings. The Apocalypse, a book of the end. Oh, Martin, that's so simple. Anybody could see that. Yeah, then why didn't you see it? Huh? 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 Have you written that to me, huh? We don't talk about this. One's the book of beginning, one's the book of the end. The earth is created in Genesis 1:1. The earth passes away in 21:1. The earth is created, the earth passes away. I think that's an interesting correspondence. Satan's first rebellion is found in Genesis. His final rebellion is found in the Apocalypse. Oh my God, I love this. It just keeps, that is so good. I could stop there. And those three things, I'm sold. But I got about 20 more for you. Number 4, the sun, the moon, and the stars are made for Earth's government. Chapter 1, verses 14 through 16 of Genesis. The sun, moon, and the stars are connected with Earth's judgment. Revelation 6, Revelation 8, Revelation 16. Sun, moon, stars, celestial bodies, ruling bodies. We see them coming up again in the unveiling in a better way. Usually, except for one point here, I think things are all vastly improved. as you're going to see. The sun is created in chapter 1, verse 16 of Genesis to govern the day. In Revelation 21, 23, there's no need of the sun in the New Jerusalem because God is the sun. God is the light. God, it's awe-inspiring that God is this smart. And he gave somebody wisdom to see this. Darkness called night, Genesis 1:5. There's no night, 22:5. Night is abolished. The waters are called seas for the first time, Genesis 1:10. In Revelation 21:1, there is no more sea. The sea speaks of the turmoil of humanity, the roiling masses, the unsteadiness. There's no sea on the new earth. That solves a, quote, problem that was established on purpose by God in Genesis so that he could solve it in Revelation. A river for earth's blessing is founded by God in Genesis, chapter 2, verses 10 through 14. There's a river for the new earth as well that irrigates the new earth. A new and improved one, I dare say, chapter 22 of the unveiling. Man is made in God's image. Genesis 1:26. Here's the one bad thing. Man is headed by one who comes in Satan's image, chapter 13. The man of lawlessness. That's the one thing where I see there's a correspondence, but it's a negative correspondence. In chapter 3 of Genesis, we see the entrance of sin. In chapters 21 and 22 of the unveiling, we see the development and the end of sin. The end of sin in Revelation. The beginning of sin in Genesis. This is the answer to it. There's a curse pronounced in Genesis, chapter 3, verses 14 and 17. There is no more curse on the new earth. Revelation 22:3. Curse, no more curse. Death enters into the world in 3:19 of Genesis. Death exits in 21:4. Not absolutely, because there's no more death operating on the new earth. We know that death is ultimately abolished, according to Paul, at the consummation, which occurs after the new heavens and the new earth. But still, vast improvement. No more people dying. The cherubim are first mentioned in connection with humanity in Genesis 3:24. And we know that the cherubim, or the animals, come back. We've talked about them already. They're finally mentioned in connection with man. Their last connection with man. Chapter 4, verse 6, we've talked about them. That's their last connection with man. We saw the first connection with humanity in the Garden of Eden. Man was driven out from Eden. You remember that one, Adam and Eve? Bye-bye. You're no longer welcome here. That was chapter 3, verse 24. Humanity is restored in paradise. Humanity is restored in paradise in the unveiling, chapter 22, on the new earth. Humanity is restored to... That's where Jesus is going to meet the thief, on the cross. Remember, the thief next to him said, Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus didn't say, well, no, you're not going to be into the kingdom, because he wasn't going to be, but he said, I say to you today, you will be with me in paradise. He didn't say, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise. That's impossible because Jesus died for 3 days and the thief is still dead. He's going to meet him in the paradise of God on the new earth. That's the paradise. That's the restored Eden. That's where humanity finds the restoration that it lost in Genesis. This is answered in the unveiling. There was a tree of life planted in the garden. Chapter 3, verse 24. And we have the tree of life coming back in the 22nd chapter of the unveiling of Jesus Christ. The tree of life. And now there's freedom to eat of it. There's a right to the tree of life. Whereas before it was guarded. It was guarded. The cherubim wouldn't let you get to it. Now it's open for all. Sorrow and suffering entered into the world in Genesis chapter 3, 17. There's no more sorrow. Revelation 21:4. Man's religion, man's art, man's science came to be for our enjoyment in chapter 4. Men became artificers, remember, and they built things and they made musical instruments, and man became covetous of these things, to the point that today we worship musical instruments, we worship rock bands, we worship movies, we worship artists of all ilk and stripe. But here in the unveiling, man's religion, His luxury, his art, his science, in their full glory, is judged and destroyed by God. Chapter 18, speaking of Babylon. Babylon becomes the essence of everything man can do, of every luxury man can concoct, of every art and every skill refined to its highest refining point, and it's destroyed. It's found lacking and destroyed by God. That happens in the unveiling. And I'm glad of it, including the internet. Nimrod. Remember that guy? He was such a Nimrod, a great rebel, a king. He was the hidden Antichrist. He was a type of the Antichrist, Nimrod was. He was the founder of Babylon. How's that for your resume? What have you done, Mr. Nimrod? I'm looking at your resume. What's this? Yeah, I was the founder of Babylon. Doesn't that mean confusion? Yes, it does mean confusion. Isn't that going to be the world capitals and in the end times? We see Babylon is slated to be destroyed because it's in total opposition to God. That's right. That's me, Nimrod. Mm-hmm. Well, that is going to be, there's going to be an anti-type of Nimrod. It's going to be the beast, the great rebel, a king and manifested anti-God. He was the hidden anti-God and anti-Christ. There's going to be a manifested one, the reviver of Babylon. I got to switch over and see how much time I have here. I'm at 11 minutes. I might not get this whole list, but think of the joy you're going to have over the weekend to anticipate the rest of this amazing correspondence between Genesis and Revelation. I'm almost tempted to stall a little bit just so I don't give you all of this, just so you're ready for it for Monday. And then once again, I put off the seven-sealed scroll. That's not good, but that's the way it happens here. We're flying by the seat of our pants here on the Revelation series. A flood from God destroyed an evil generation. Remember that? Chapter 6 through 9 of Genesis. Flood from God destroyed an evil generation. We see a corresponding flood from Satan to destroy an elect generation in chapter 12. Satan sends a flood to destroy the woman. And this is literal water, as we're going to see. Martin, you think that's literal? You already know I do. So, now, God put a bow, after the flood, he put a bow in the sky, the rainbow, a token of his covenant with the earth to never again flood to kill all of humanity with water. That was chapter 9, verse 13. Now, we also know, we've already looked at this, there's an emerald rainbow. It's betokening God's remembrance of his covenant with the earth. And we see the emerald rainbow surrounding the throne, and we see the four animals, right? The lion, the calf, the eagle, and the man that represent God's promise to the earth. And they are remembered. And so this covenant comes back in Revelation. And the only other time we saw it was in Genesis. You're telling me Revelation does not belong in the scripture or that it's a puzzle? We're uncovering it now. We're talking about it. While others are complaining that it can't be understood. I'm on chapter 5. I'm practically a moron, and I get this. I've explained it to you, and now you get it. We're on chapter 5, for the love of God. We've understood what the seven ecclesias are. We've understood what the lambkin represents. We've analyzed the throne of God. We know that God literally doesn't sit on a throne, but it represents his power. We know that there are spiritual beings all over the place there. There are four animals. There are 24 elders. We're talking about this. Are you with me, right? I'm explaining it to you. Because I'm reading about it from a man who understood it because he studied the scripture. Maybe he got it from somebody. I don't care. We teach Paul's gospel. And we all credit Paul. Oh, we got it from Paul. It's like, well, you're stealing Paul's material. Yeah, I am. I'm stealing everybody's material. I steal from everybody. As Picasso said, artists steal, great, or artists borrow, great artists steal. We all borrow from each other. Guess what? Paul inaugurated. He didn't inaugurate this. He stole it from Christ. Christ gave it to him. Okay, well, Christ, he's the first one. We'll give him credit. Well, give it to God. I think God probably gave it to Christ. Who cares? Who cares, really? Who cares? I'm going to check my time again. Uh-oh, 14 minutes and 5 seconds. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to have to crank it back here for the week, but it's been an enjoyable week with you. I love coming here and sitting in front of this microphone talking to you. Even though I'm staring at a wall, the more of you who write me and talk to me and tell me you enjoy the show, I feel like I'm talking to friends and instead of to a wall. So on Monday, we're going to be back. I'm going to be back talking about the rest of these great correspondences. We're going to look at the seven-sealed scroll. I'm going to talk about the difference between redemption and deliverance. And this unveiling is no longer going to be a mystery to you. It's no longer going to be an unsolvable enigma. This is an answer to the world's deepest problems. We have the answers. We're talking about the answers. The answers are of God.